This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Welcome, everybody, to the Orange Buzz Podcast on a Monday. I'm Jeff Ketchum, owner, publisher, host, writer, column writer over at orangebuzz.com, as most of you already know that. Kind of strange. It was an NFL wild card weekend. We've got the national championship game tonight, and yet there is this first real piece of emptiness as someone who covers college football professionally, but also a college football fan. This was our first week of, you know, tomorrow, this show being recorded on Monday, we'll be a week removed from the final game of the 2018 season for the Longhorns, even though we are into 2019. And it really has led to a weekend of reflection more than anything else. Although the NFL weekend was hot, I will get into some of that in a little bit, since we're now moving into a part of the content with the podcast that will probably sound a lot more like my old radio shows, where we're talking about current events, we're talking about the news of the day, and it won't always be Texas football the way that it is when we go from September through December, and it's just nonstop every week, especially so when you've got a team that has finished with a Sugar Bowl championship, went to the Big 12 championship game, and had the best season that it's had in nearly a decade. 9 seasons. So, you know, I was writing my 10 thoughts from the weekend, and one of the things that popped into my head was just the fact that I don't know that we fully have enough appreciation for the season that Sam Ehlinger just had. One of the numbers that stood out to me as I was doing my 10 thoughts from the weekend earlier this week was a stat that Anwar posted in his Sunday Pulpit. Sam Ehlinger, in becoming, you know, because he had 41 combined touchdowns this season, 25 passing and 15 rushing. The only players in the last 20 years to do what Sam Ehlinger did this season with 25 passing touchdowns and 15 rushing touchdowns: Tim Tebow, Cam Newton, Johnny Manziel, Marcus Mariota, and Lamar Jackson. And that is it. Arguably, Tim Tebow, one of the greatest, you know, if you talk to Southeast Conference fans, they'll tell you that Tim Tebow is a top five player in the history of the sport. It's interesting that Vince Young didn't do that. It's interesting that Colt McCoy didn't do that. It's interesting. The list is Tim Tebow Heisman, Cam Newton Heisman, Johnny Manziel Heisman, Marcus Mariota first pick in the draft, or I guess second pick in the draft, Lamar Jackson Heisman. That's crazy company to keep, even though, you know, his overall passer rating still has room for growth when you think about the totality of this season, how it ended, the wins that Sam Ehlinger had in performing really, really well. I asked this question on Orange Bloods, and not one person fought me on it. It was the very first point that I made in my column. Outside of Vince Young in 2005, outside of Colt McCoy in 2008, is there any other quarterback season that the University of Texas has ever enjoyed from anybody that was as good as the one that Sam Ehlinger just had? A player that admittedly still has room for growth, but when we look at the bottom line, when we look at the totals, look, Colt McCoy has his number retired at Texas. But the season that Sam Ehlinger just had was better than Colt McCoy's freshman season. It was better than Colt McCoy's sophomore season. Probably not as good as his junior season. Absolutely better than Colt McCoy's senior season in Austin. I mean, marinate on that a little bit. We look at Vince Young, the end of Vince Young's season as a redshirt freshman back in 2004. It was, well, look, Vince redshirted in 2002, 2003 was a redshirt. So redshirt sophomore season. Vince Young had the great end. The second half of the season, starting with that Texas Tech game, was the beginning of Vince Young really getting on a roll. And obviously, it concludes with him winning in the Rose Bowl against Michigan with one of the more dominant bowl performances you've ever seen in your life until the very next year when he does the same thing at USC. If you look at all of 2004, I think a very strong case can be made that Sam Ellinger had the better year. Again, he finishes with more combined touchdowns than Vince had. And when you look at the breakdown, 25 passing and 15 or more rushing, we're talking about in the last 20 years. And I wonder if you extended this back 30, 40 years, if it changes the numbers. I didn't do the research. They capped it off at 20, which means you would go back to 1998. I'm guessing that there aren't a lot of guys out there pre-1998 that were going 25 and 15. And they all probably won the Heisman. Because again, when you look at the roll call from the last 20 years, the list is Tim Tebow, Cam Newton, Johnny Manziel, Marcus Mariota, Lamar Jackson, and now Sam Ellinger. It really does beg the question that in the history of the Texas program, how many guys have had better years than the one at the quarterback position that Sam Ellinger just had in his sophomore season? Win over Oklahoma, Big 12 championship game appearance, Sugar Bowl victory, all of the stats. I just wonder if we all have enough appreciation. Probably not. Which is kind of crazy when you think about the Longhorns have gone nearly a decade without good quarterback play. And if I had told you back in a year ago, after the end of the 2017 season, if I had said, look, Sam Ellinger is going to throw for 25, he's going to rush for 16, they're going to win the Sugar Bowl, they're going to beat Oklahoma in Dallas, react. I think every Texas fan that I could have told that to would have said, oh, we're going to go batshit crazy. There's going to be overkill and overhype, and we are going to turn Sam Ellinger into some combination of Johnny Appleseed, Santa Claus, and Paul Bunyan. That's what we're going to do. We're going to make him into a mythological creature that could never exist in real life. And yet here we are 12 months later, 13 months later. Well, I guess if you include the bowl game, really, in legitimately 12 months and some change, I don't feel like Texas fans are completely losing their minds over Sam Ellinger. It was only a week ago that I found myself arguing with not just one person, not just two people, not just three people. There was admittedly a very small minority of people within the context of 100% of Orange Blood subscribers, but there was a smattering of people who were legitimately arguing, I don't know if Sam Ellinger is even the best quarterback on this team right now. That may sound stupid, because it is, but because Cameron Rising and Casey Thompson are in the transfer portal, there are people who chose to take the mindset of, well, yes, I know Cameron Rising redshirted. And yes, Casey Thompson redshirted. And most of this seems to be focused on Cameron Rising, who weirdly has a hype connected to him that doesn't match his incoming resume. Like, I think Cameron Rising is a really nice quarterback prospect. I don't think more of that than him. He falls into the category of 80% of the people with his recruiting profile fail to become the kind of college quarterbacks that ultimately lead to being drafted. I'm not saying he's not going to be that guy. I'm saying that his recruiting profile suggests he's a 20% chance of turning into what Sam Ellinger is turning into. That's the reality. But I was arguing with people who were like, look, you don't know. You haven't seen him. You don't know. I'm like, well, look, we've got insight from people who have seen him. He's not better than Sam. You don't know. You don't know. Has he played in a game? I was like, well, theoretically, you didn't know that Matt Norgren was better than Vince Young because Matt Norgren hadn't appeared in a game. I mean, what do you want me to say? But that line of thinking was existing in part because I don't think enough people had really respected the season that Sam Ehlinger had. A season where he outperformed and outplayed Kyler Murray the first time those two players met. Not the second time, but he did the first time. He outplayed Will Greer head-to-head. He outplayed Jake Fromm head-to-head. Landslide. In the latter two cases, even though Will Greer comes away with a win in Austin, so like props to Greer, I don't mean to take anything away from him. He was fantastic. But on that day, if you go back and look at the numbers, Ehlinger was better. Ehlinger was better than Will Greer head-to-head. And maybe if that game's played in Morgantown, maybe the numbers and the quarterback efficiency numbers and everything, maybe they flip-flop, because it wasn't like Will Greer was a slug. It's just on that day, Sam Ehlinger might have been the best he's been all season. In a season where he outperformed Kyler Murray, in a season where he outperformed Jake Fromm, who Texas fans today want to look at as a terrible quarterback, because on the one day Texas fans saw Jake Fromm, he didn't play real well. But that dude had an incredible season. I outlined it in one of our Ticket City podcasts back in the end of the year when I looked up his numbers. He has, Jake Fromm individually, one of the greatest seasons in the history of any quarterback from the Southeastern Conference. Well, they don't play anybody. Okay. I mean, a lot of teams don't play 12 games worth of meat on the schedule. Texas doesn't. Now, Texas plays probably a heavier non-conference schedule than a lot of teams, but you know, I don't know that you can look at every quarterback that does something well and look at their schedule and go, didn't play anybody. I mean, there's some really crappy teams in the Big 12. So even if you're not playing them in the non-conference, you know, you still get crap. The Kansas schools this year were not good. They just weren't. I just wonder, and I wonder what it looks like next year for Sam Ehlinger, because I think that there is a propensity to, and I've put me into this category. I think it's fair to assume that Ehlinger will be better, because a lot of guys make their biggest leaps as players from their sophomore seasons to their junior seasons. Look at Vince Young, look at Colt McCoy. That is typically what we see. But Ehlinger's season was so good at the end that I think we're taking it for granted a little bit. Look, when we talk about in the last 20 years, how many guys have done 25 passing touchdowns and 15 rushing touchdowns in the same season, and we say Tim Tebow, and we say Cam Newton, and we say Johnny Manziel, and Marcus Mariota and Lamar Jackson, I'd have to look it up, but I wonder how many times those guys did that twice. I'll tell you what. We know that Cam Newton only played one season. But let me look at Tim Tebow's collegiate stats. Let's see how many times out of 4 years he pulled that off. Because he's the guy that Sam's going to be most compared to. Right? I mean, I wrote about this right after the game. We're going to hear 5 million Tim Tebow, Sam Ehlinger comparisons between now and the start of next season. So if we look at Tim Tebow's numbers, he only had more than 25 passing touchdowns twice. He did it as a sophomore. He did it as a junior. Interestingly enough, Tebow's numbers dipped as a senior, similarly to Colt McCoy. Both of those guys had their best seasons as juniors. And then, in literally the same season, in 2008, and they come back the next year. Let's look at rushing touchdowns. He only did it one time. So, when we talk about Sam Ehlinger and what he did this season and what the expectations will be of next season, history shows us it's really hard. Matter of fact, Tebow didn't even do the 25 and 15 in his Heisman season. In his Heisman season, he only had 12 touchdowns rushing. And he had 23 rushing touchdowns in 2007, and he threw for 32. That is a monster season. It's easy to hate on Tim Tebow, but in 2007, his quarterback rating was over 170. He had 32 touchdowns and 6 interceptions, and he rushed for 23 touchdowns. Damn. That's not kind of good. That is sensationally good. But The numbers that Colt just, or excuse me, that, that Freudian slip there, the numbers that Sam just put up, Timmy Tebow only did that one time. Like, Tim Tebow makes the list, and he definitely makes the list, but it's not as easy as I think. I think Texas fans are going to take the 25 and 15 thing for granted a little bit. I think it's an easy thing to take for granted. Consider when we look at Lamar Jackson. Now, Lamar Jackson's an interesting guy. And if you're Sam Ellinger, maybe he's the guy that you want to be compared to, because Lamar Jackson did it in 2016 and 2017. Lamar Jackson did the double dip. He did the 25 and 15, and he did it twice. In 2016, the year he won the Heisman, 30 touchdowns, 21 rushing touchdowns, a Tim Tebow-esque 2007-type season, although his quarterback rating was only 148. Which was about what Sam's was this season. Interesting. I never realized that Lamar Jackson's passing efficiency was that low. That's not great. Of course, you know, rushing for 1,500 yards and 1,600 yards from junior year to senior year, that's pretty great. I mean, you know, say what you want to, Lamar Jackson did combine essentially for 50 touchdowns two consecutive years. Not quite 50 as a senior, but 46. So Lamar Jackson has done it. We know that Cam Newton didn't do it because Cam Newton only played one season. And there are some that believe that Cam Newton is the greatest quarterback in NCAA history, even better than Vince Young. I don't believe that. I think Vince Young's the best player I've ever seen. And I think when you look at what Cam Newton did in the championship game against Oregon that year, where Vince Young dominated on the biggest stage, Cam Newton wasn't awesome that night. If we look at Johnny Manziel's stats from his two seasons in college football, he did it one time. He did it the year that he won the Heisman in 2012, when he threw for 26 touchdowns and he rushed for 21 touchdowns. The very next season, he throws for 37, but he only rushes for 9. So that's we're watching them drop like flies now. Tebow did it once. Manziel did it once. Cam Newton did it once. Let's check out on old Marcus Mariota. Marcus Mariota, as a college player, had three seasons where he threw for more than 30 touchdowns. Incredible. But he only had one season where he actually rushed for in double-digit touchdowns. His final season, he rushed for 15. So a little bit like Sam, he squeaks on in. But he only did it one time. As great of a player as Marcus Mariota was in his career, 105 touchdowns, 14 interceptions. That's incredible. And he was an absolute threat as a rusher. He rushed for over 700 yards in all three seasons as a starter at Oregon. Not even Vince Young did that. Colt never did that. Tebow never did that. Like, that is an amazing career, but he only did the 25 and 15 thing once. And then the only other guy that, and that's it. Tebow did it once. Cam did it once. Johnny did it once. Marcus did it once. Lamar Jackson did it twice. So when we talk about the season that Sam just had, and I think we look at his rushing touchdowns and we think to ourselves, that can be replicated, although it took three of them in the final game of the season to get to that marker. So it's not as easy, clearly. I mean, there's a reason why these things don't happen very often. I just don't think we've given Sam nearly enough. And I just don't know that people have enough of an appreciation for just how good that year was. And it isn't easy to assume that it will be replicated. Now, the good news is, look, Sam's passing numbers, I think, will get better. In fact, I didn't write about this yesterday. It may be something that I write about in my next column. I felt like the way I did my column this week, it was the kind of big discussion that I didn't want to bury the lead. So it may be the lead in a future column that I write. I think Texas is going to be a much more passing-dependent team in 2019. I think we're going to see Sam continue to improve as a passer. I think when you look at the what Texas has at wide receiver right now, even if Lil' Jordan, look, we know what it, if Lil' Jordan Humphrey comes back to play with Colin Johnson and Devin Duvernay and all the kids in that 2019 class or 2018 class and all of the kids coming in from 2019, that is as gifted and deep of a wide receiver unit as we've ever seen in the history of this program. I think you could make a case that this year's wide receiver unit isn't far off of that. But even if you lose Lil Jordan, it is the strength in numbers and the strength in quality in numbers. The wide receiver unit is the best position on this team. Maybe with all due respect to the defensive back unit, which you could make a case if for no other reason than B.J. Foster and Caden Stearns are back there, and those dudes are bad mamma jammas. And oh, by the way, I think Anthony Cook is going to be one of the breakout players of next season. That's three. That's three really, really good ones. But I think Texas at wide receiver goes almost 10 deep. I think Texas is in future years is going to have some receivers transfer. I mean, they can play. They can play. It just, it's going to be tough sledding to get on the field because these classes keep getting stacked on top of each other. And as it currently stands, the starting unit of Johnson, Humphrey, and Duvernay, they're kind of blocking a lot of guys. So Humphrey turning pro, actually, I'm not going to say it's a positive thing for Texas. What it does, though, is a positive thing. And that it does open the door up for some of the receivers behind him to come in where there's a path blocked right now. I mean, you could make a case that the second best, well, Oklahoma would probably still raise their hand and say, have you seen what we're doing in recruiting? We're second to no one at the wide receiver position. If you took Oklahoma starting receivers and you took Texas's starting receivers out of the equation, you could make a case that the Longhorns' second-string receiving unit is the best of the rest in the Big 12 in terms of wide receiver units. You could make a case that the third-string Texas wide receiver unit is, if you take all of those other ones out of the, like, top five, regardless of whether you include the Texas and Oklahoma starters or not. That's how good Texas is at wide receiver. And when you look at running back, and I wrote about a little bit of this in my 10 thoughts from the weekend. After Keyonte Ingram, there's not a lot there. You've got a guy in Darian Brown coming in as a true freshman that I don't think many people looked at when he decided as, oh, instant impact guy. Trey Watson leaves. Texas is left with Daniel Young, Kurt Johnson, and some other dudes that haven't played a whole lot. There are a couple of names that I looked at. Didn't they transfer? I thought they transferred. So it really is at this point a Keyonte Ingram, Daniel Young show at running back, barring a transfer similar to Trey Watson. And I don't think you can completely dismiss that possibility given that it just happened a year ago and given that the transfer things seem to be heating up more than they're cooling off. I think they're, you know, I'm going to shrug my shoulders and say that there will be guys available at every position potentially and that you want to be really good at that transfer market. Because you can get a lot better. You know, Trey Watson and Calvin Anderson made this team really good this year. Like, they helped. So, I'm full on board with bring in whoever you can bring in. Maybe sometimes they won't work out, but if they do, they can make you considerably better. And, you know, Texas probably doesn't win that game without Trey Watson and Calvin Anderson. I'm speaking of the Sugar Bowl game against Georgia. Like, those two guys played really well. I thought Trey Watson was top 10 player on the field that night? That might be underselling him. He had 100. He was really good. He was the best running back on the field. And Georgia's got a bunch of dudes that are going to play in the NFL. And Trey Watson was the best of the bunch. But when you look at next year's offense, Ellinger is a strength. His legs are a strength. But the wide receiving unit around him is a major strength. I think Texas will pass block better than they will run block. And the running back position is such that this looks like a Texas offense that I think going into the next season leans heavily towards passing much more so than it did this year. And Tom Herman might dispute that. He might say, No, we want to be, you know, Greg Davis and Mac used to say this. No, we, in a dream world, we're going for 250 and 250. And we'll be balanced. Teams won't be able to break through our balance. And Tom Herman subscribes to that. He wants to be a guy that's somewhat 50-50, if at all possible. I think next year's kind of a 60-40 season. I think that it's impossible to know what you even get out of Keyonte Ingram. Because I think he's really, really talented. But he did burn out towards the end of the season. Second half of the season, he got tired. His production levels plummeted. To the point where I feel embarrassed for continuing to have hyped him up and been like, they got to get him the ball. He's the difference maker. He's the X factor. And he wasn't. I was wrong about that. So I'm not trying to, you know, correct myself by going too far the other direction. Because Keyonte Ingram's going to be your starter. And I think he's got a chance to be a 1,000-yard type running back. But if he were to get hurt, there's not much behind him. And whether he gets hurt or not, there's not much behind him. This, you know, and it's for a guy that couldn't handle a heavy workload next season or last season. It's hard to just assume even a year with Yancey McKnight, like, oh yeah, no, he'll be 20, 25 carries a game and he'll be okay for 13, 14 games. I mean, we don't know that about Keyonte Ingram. Like that has to be proven. It has to be earned. Even if he's doing it in week six, you know, he could be on his way to a 1,200-yard season through the halfway point of the season. We still, I think, have to go, well, let's see how it goes down the stretch. And even if he were to rush for 1,200, 1,300 yards next season, that still might mean that can happen, and Texas could also be more passing game-centric in 2019. Those two things don't have to be mutually exclusive. So I think, you know, when I look at Sam, I say, I think he gets better as a passer. I don't know. I think the thing that I worry about the most with Sam, full transparency, you know, at the end of the Georgia game, I guess I'm doing this thing out of order. Full transparency, I still worry about Sam. I still worry that his usage is a little too high. You know, you probably don't get to that 25 and 15 number without your quarterback, your coaches overusing you to an extent. I thought Sam, I'm not taking a shot at the coaches when I say he's overused, because he's their best option. Think back to the third quarter against Georgia, or maybe even the fourth quarter, when they had at the 1 foot line, 1 yard line, Sam goes at it four different times. They run essentially some version of like the quarterback counter to try to gain that last yard. And every time Sam's taking the ball, and every time Sam's taking a big hit, and even after he scored the touchdown, when you watch him pick his body up off the ground, as many shots as he was delivering, he was also taking a lot. And Sam did miss some time this season. You know, I think the one thing that when you look at how the Texas coaches have to use Sam next year, I think they've got to pick their spots with how they use him as a runner. If you want to run him 20 times against LSU and just ram him in the wall because he's the best you got, like, I get that. But if it's first and goal from the three and you're playing against Kansas State next season, I mean, you got to either throw the ball or give the ball to Keyonte Ingram, unless there's some real pressure for Sam to have to do it. I just think you got to take some of this out of Sam's hands. Because I don't know that he knows how to hold back. And I don't know that he can. I think the Georgia players were somewhat right in that the way Sam plays might not be the way a quarterback could play 13, 14 games in the Big 12. And you know how I know that? Because the way Sam plays didn't allow for him to play 13, 14 games this year. He's missed games in each of the last two seasons. And, you know, the injury this year, a little flukish, I guess. It wasn't him trying to just plow through somebody. But Sam's a guy that has, for as great of a season as he's had, and again, I'm telling you, I think it might be the third best quarterback season in the history of Texas football. You know, there are still areas where he can get better. The passing game consistently. And I think they've got to be smart with him. Because Sam's not Vince. Sam's not Vince. Vince Young was 6'5", 225, 230, and just a bigger guy. And I know Sam's 230, but he's it comes in a bit of a smaller, more compact package. So when you think about how the coaches have to use Sam Ehlinger next season, I think protecting him and looking out for him is in their best interest, because what you don't want to do is, at this point, the smart money would be, look, you're probably going to need someone else to play the position for at least a week or two next year at some point, because Sam in the first two seasons hasn't been able to stay healthy. I think you have to, you know, shrug your shoulders and kind of admit that, look, it's within absolutely within the realm of possibilities that Sam has to miss a game or two of next season. You know, is that Casey Thompson's time to shine? My prediction of what I think is going to happen, and I hate speculating on this because, and I probably shouldn't, but the guys have their names in the transfer portal. I'm not pulling this out of thin air. Your Cameron Rising and Casey Thompson have their names in the transfer portal. I think one of them is probably going to transfer. If I had to put my money on it, I would say Cameron Rising, because I don't think that dude wants to wait three seasons before he starts. If he transferred and even sat out a season, and I'm not trying to be an advocate for this, I'm just being real. If he were to transfer right now and, or just, you know, not like January 10th, but before the start of the end of the semester, or he finishes out the semester and transfers at that point, and that's probably the smart thing to do, because unless he's got a hardship, he'd have to sit out next season anyway. But he'd be a starter potentially somewhere in 2020, whereas that looks like that would be Sam Ehlinger's senior season, unless Sam goes pro early. And that might be a little too soon to think that. I haven't heard anybody yet say Sam Ehlinger is a first or second round grade at quarterback. We could eventually get there, and then this conversation is a moot point. But if Sam's a player that stays for his final two seasons, then nobody's starting around here until 2021, and that might just be too long for a guy like Cameron Rising. It might be perfect for a guy like Casey Thompson, though, because it allows Casey Thompson to continue to develop, and then Sam's out, and you probably had some game time in those two seasons, and then as a junior, you have a chance to start, and then as a senior, you have a chance to start. So I think that probably looks better on paper to a guy like Casey Thompson, but hell, man, Casey Thompson probably wants to play before 2021. It's a long time. That we'll be a year and a half into a new presidential four-year cycle. Like, that's a long time. It's a long time. 2021... September of 2021, that's a minute now. I mean, I guess technically we would be just that first year, because the election will be in 20. And then at the end of 20, there'd be that weird 2-3 month cycle where until the next president is inaugurated, there's that period in between the election and whatever. You got me. I miscounted. Not 15 months, 9-ish. I'm also counting on Trump losing full transparency. God help us if that doesn't happen. And I know some of you just rolled your eyes. Oh, don't get political. It's a podcast. I can say what I want to say. It's the weekend. And I don't care what you think about that. Oh, I have to put a disclaimer on the podcast. Warning, 15 seconds of political talk. I may have to do that. Let's transition away from Sam. Somehow I've been able to do nearly 35 minutes on Sam Ehlinger, and let's quickly go through the NFL playoffs, national championship game tonight. Let's start there. I think this is a tough one for me. In my official prediction, which I botched the score over at orangebloods.com by picking an overtime final that is almost certainly not going to happen that way, barring Clemson deciding to kick a field goal and just losing the game. Like, it's possible, but heads would roll, that's for sure. There'd be a lot of question marks, but not impossible. I think this one's close. It's hard for me not to. Look, I think Alabama has a quarterback advantage, but I think Clemson's playing better football right now. I think the last month or so, and I say that given that Alabama came out and sent a message, obviously, against Oklahoma about the type of football that they're playing. I think they're the best two teams in the country, and I think Clemson's playing a slightly better brand of football right now consistently than Alabama has, but Alabama has the biggest difference maker in this game, and it may be that they didn't play as well down the season. The big part of that had to do with the fact that Tua wasn't at 100% because of that high ankle sprain. So I'm going with Alabama. I'm going in overtime. That's how close I think this game's going to be. But it wouldn't surprise me if Clemson won. Clearly, I think the game could go to overtime. That tells you how closely I think this thing is matched up. But I think it's going to be a fantastic game. Now, over on the NFL side of things, hey, man, the Cowboys won a playoff game. Can't take that for granted. Dak Prescott now halfway there to the number of playoff career wins that Tony Romo had. He's got one, Romo had two. God, that sucks to say out loud. The other thing that sucks is the Cowboys haven't won a divisional round playoff game in 23 years. You actually have to go to the last Super Bowl season, the 1995 season, which ends in January of 1996. That's the last. I was at that game. The last time the Cowboys won a divisional playoff game. It's crazy. They beat the Eagles 31-9, if I'm not mistaken. Or I may have that score. I have to look it up. For some, I spit it out. It was like buried in my subconscious until it was needed. Maybe I got that right. Maybe I got it wrong. I'll have to look it up. They haven't won a division. Clearly, if you haven't won a divisional playoff game, you haven't been to a conference championship game. 23 years, man. It's a long time. And I know it makes me sound like a bad fan because I wasn't able. Look, don't get me wrong. I was really happy that I enjoyed the hell out of 30-11, not 31-9. Oh, I was kind of close. Off by a point with the Dallas part, off by 2 points with the Eagles part. That was a wonderful game, by the way. They waxed that ass. Oh, I love it when the Eagles get beat by the Cowboys in the playoffs. And that's a weird thing. It would not shock, because I think Dallas has a really good chance of beating the Rams this weekend. Speaking of teams that didn't finish the season the way they started, we know that the Rams, despite all that talent they have on the defensive side of the ball, they've been taking on points. It hasn't been, I think, a thing of beauty at the end. I mean, they got a first round bye, so. But, you know, the way the Rams started versus the way that thing ended, I think they're vulnerable. And the Eagles in New Orleans, like, I would pick the Saints to win that game, but would anybody blink if Nick Foles and the Eagles win again, the defending Super Bowl champions? It's not outside the realm of possibilities that Dallas and Philadelphia could play in the conference championship game, and that frightens the ever-living shit out of me. But back in that game in January of 96, technically the last divisional round game that the Cowboys have won. Oh, man. Deion scored that day. Emmett scored that day. Mike scored that day. That's a good day. That's a good day. If you go back in the mid-90s to a Dallas Cowboys playoff game, and they played against Randall Cunningham that day, which would have been Cunningham's second stint with the Eagles? Like, I'm trying to figure that out. When did Randall Cunningham leave the Eagles the first time? He had a bad day that day. I don't mean to, like, it was like the next season he went to Minnesota. That was the last game he ever played as an Eagle. I never realized that. True story. Last game that Randall Cunningham ever played for the Philadelphia Eagles a playoff loss to the Cowboys. Last game that Donovan McNabb ever played as a quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles, playoff loss to the Cowboys. How about them apples? You like them? They taste good. It's about the only thing I've got to chew on and feel good about for the last 23 years. I like this Dallas team's chances in the playoffs the rest of the way. I don't know how much I would like it. Love them. I know they kicked New Orleans ass. But I feel like a playoff game with a trip to the Super Bowl in New Orleans would be a tough feat to overcome. But I think beating the Rams is possible. And that would be, look, that would make this season the best season that the Cowboys have had in 23 seasons. So I hate to sound like a bad fan, but there was just a part of me that wasn't fully able to enjoy beating Seattle because it doesn't mean anything. Because if this season were played in a vacuum and none of the last 23 seasons mattered and just this season mattered, then you'd love the win over Seattle. But the last 22 years matter, man. The history, we love the history of the Cowboys having won 5 Super Bowls. We love that history. Well, you can't love that history and then ignore the recent history, which says they haven't gotten out of this upcoming round in two plus decades. It's like getting excited because Texas won the Big 12 South back in the day. Well, you win the Big 12 South, that's nice, but like until you win the championship, like that just a smattering amount of praise, you know? Hey, Big 12 Championship South. Big 12 South rings. Nobody gave a shit about those rings. Not the players didn't. I know players that sold their rings because they were like, well, I'll keep it when we win a conference championship. And that didn't always happen. I mean, there were guys that played 4 years that thought things were going to happen and they didn't. So Saturday's game, should Dallas win, that will be the game that I enjoy. That will be the game where I look at it and go, oh man, we're not at a Super Bowl. We're going to play for one. We're going to play in a conference championship game. That's progress. This, winning a wild card game at home, like that, that's the type of stuff that Texans fans should be excited about. Not Cowboy fans. Ever. And as far as the Texans are concerned, I'm not nearly as hardcore on them as I am on the Cowboys today. And they lost. They were outclassed by Indianapolis. And look, man, Indianapolis kicked the shit out of the Cowboys. So they're as hot and playing as well as anybody in the NFL right now. Houston played the wrong team. And, you know, there's a part of me that looks at Houston and thinks, this season sets up next season. I think that next year is the year you hope Deshaun Watson takes a big step forward. And I think going into year 3 as a pro, I think that's reasonable. And I think you still have him on a fairly cheap contract. You still got JJ and Davion and Jadeveon Clowney in their primes. Like, I think next season's the year for the Texans. I'm high on them. But they got their ass kicked on Saturday. I mean, nothing you can do about it. And Texans fans don't have a history that allows them to get too upset by going out in a way they typically go out in. But I'm not freaking out on Deshaun Watson like a lot of people are today. Or on Saturday. I think he had a bad game. I think that bad games in the playoffs happen, man. Tony Romo had them. Every quarterback's had them. Even Aaron Rodgers has had playoff games where you look back on it and go, ooh, just wasn't good enough. So, I think you just, if you're a Texans fan, you just have to chalk that up as being part of the game. And I think you just have to bank that Deshaun Watson takes that step. It hasn't happened yet. Didn't happen on Saturday. But I think he's capable of it. And I think going into his third year, I think you can expect that. Take into consideration Dak Prescott in his third year on Saturday night. He took a step that he wasn't capable of last year, and he wasn't capable of in year 1. So I'm not comparing Deshaun to Dak in the sense that they're the same guy. I'm comparing them in that their situations are somewhat similar in that Dak is making progress. I think Deshaun Watson can make that progress. I think if it doesn't happen next year as a Texans fan, I would be worried. I'm not a Texans fan, but I kind of was this year because I had Deshaun Watson as a fantasy quarterback and Will Fuller. And I also don't think we give enough respect to the fact that Will Fuller wasn't there and, you know, Demaryius Thomas wasn't there either. Kind of a big deal. Just throwing that out there. You know, your number two receiver goes down. Your replacement number two receiver comes in. He goes down. Like, I think those injuries really hurt Houston as well. You can only throw the ball to Hopkins so many times before you have to have a plan B. And the Texans on offense, they've got to get better personnel. You know, I think they've got Deshaun Watt. I think their receivers are good when they're healthy. But Will Fuller can't stay healthy. Demaryius Thomas has got the retirement word in his mouth. So I don't even know that he knows what is that's going to happen with him. I think if you're Houston, you've got to find a way to boost your wide receiver unit. You've got to get Deshaun Watson more players. And that's kind of that. Overall, I can't even talk about the Eagles and the Bears. I just want the Eagles to be out. And they're not. And we could still have a Cowboys-Eagles conference championship game, and I'm not ready for that. why don't we wrap things up here? Look, thanks for hanging in there with me. I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. We'll do it again later in the week. Lots of content over at the Yak. Make sure you check out some of it. The new Hip Hop Grew Up podcast is out. Two of them, back to back. Bavu and Rick do an amazing job on that. If you enjoy hip hop, check out that podcast. You will not regret it. And on that note, we'll talk to you later. Goodbye.